Welcome back to Bitcoin Center live stream number 40 with special guest co-host.
Great to be here, Cedric.
Yeah, it's great to see you again.
Always fun to join you.
Yeah, well, these have been fun times, I guess.
Yeah, it's been wild online lately.
Yeah, cray cray, if you will.
Very.
What I guess is your take?
Oh yeah, I wanted to do a PSA and say, if you're a retard that thinks Epstein invented Bitcoin, you're a retard, and he didn't, and they didn't even really fund it. It's this like, you know, there was a donation, but there was a lot of donations. And I think there's some people out there pushing that FUD really hard, trying to make strong connections where there really aren't any. And so, you know, if you're new or you're unsure, I think it's important that people who are sure and confident and well-informed pass on the message that, like, it's not Epstein. You know, people are saying like, oh, Epstein coin, all this nonsense. It's just nonsense. I think the people that are pushing that have a very clear agenda. Well, sometimes it's less clear, but they always have an agenda, right? It's not honest information about Bitcoin.
I think Francis Pouliot, sovereign-minded pioneer, yes, he put it well. I think he said on X, "Dear progressive friends, the right-wing media is running a psyop to convince you Bitcoin is controlled by a bunch of American globalist Democrats to deliberately demonize the progressive agenda and hide the fact that Bitcoin is actually manipulated by a small group of far-right French-Canadian nationals." Don't fall for it. Well, I mean, you know, I could see how this is confusing for people. There's a lot bringing up the block size wars.
Right.
I will admit to revisiting the block size wars myself.
Sure.
And thinking about what we've learned since.
Right.
And some of the economic incentives of both sides since.
Right.
I'm a small blocker for sure, but I've really contemplated the notion of money.
Right.
And liquidity. And, you know, maybe there's, I also think that we get into a lot of these fights that have lesser outcomes in both directions.
Right.
And we throw the baby out with the bathwater. But there's a lot of FUD right now. I agree.
Yeah, the FUD is strong. And I think, you know, certainly we'll get it more into that. There's a lot of FUD in all directions right now. But that one is just the silliest to me. And the people, if you're really looking at the people really pushing it, it's just clear that they have alternative. They're pushing XRP and,
yeah, you know. I do see a lot of that.
Yeah.
And but do you think a decentralized stablecoin can even be a thing? And if it could be a thing, would that be interesting?
I don't think it's a thing because they would have an issuer, right? Would there be an issuer?
The last I've heard, I mean, in terms of decentralization, like the last battle for this was around like this coin DAI and MakerDAO, and they had decentralized reserves, and then they centralized the reserves, and one of the founders died under mysterious circumstances. And it's always been a question mark for me. A stable coin is a bit of a misnomer.
Yes.
Because they get debased and they have a lot of negative qualities.
Right.
But the idea of less volatility is interesting. And it's better than fiat in a lot of ways, or paper fiat in term, or just has less capital controls in some ways. Maybe they'll have more, but...
Yeah, see, I don't know if I agree with that. I think that they're coming in very heavy regulatorily.
But what I'm saying in terms of... these stable coins will end up in markets that have worse fiat than the actual stable coin.
That's
so in some ways, there's benefits
right.
to some users.
For some people,
they make
right.
sense in a lot of ways on global scale at this phase of the monetary transition.
Yeah, like if you're in Argentina, one of our developers, for example, is from Argentina, one of my favorite people. And he talks about, you know, you go to the grocery store, things are priced in dollars, pesos, just all of these like multiple currencies. And so perhaps that's a way to
manage that or
make that less problematic, right. Like all of them moving around.
Unit of account is everything.
Yes. Yeah.
And if Bitcoin is relegated or captured as a digital store of value, sort of pet rock, then it won't be used as money as much and won't be used in pricing and communication of value and all those important things.
Cash App just came out with a big campaign incentivizing people to use their Bitcoin as payment. I don't know if you've seen that yet.
Yeah, definitely.
So
they're doing a lot of smart things that are savvy.
The pet rock is not solidified yet.
I'm with you. Let's keep fighting. Let's start the show.
Let's go.
Bitcoin Center number 40 brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself.
That's right.
Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet. I've always felt like Vitalik.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there, that people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard of them a few weeks ago? Now everybody's talking about them, but is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is it just
debate that?
Stupid. To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
You do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, good. Thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I always get that wrong. All right.
Bitcoin's recent rally.
Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead?
Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
There's some rumors that it's this Japanese guy, but they're saying no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
You're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
It will come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is the story.
Outside investors, SoftBank, you know, we have what it takes to build massive cash-generating businesses within the industry. Strike is one of the most profitable per-employee Bitcoin companies in the world. Tether is probably the most profitable per-employee company, period, in the history of mankind. So we have lots of ideas and lots of future plans to build cash flow within the market that gives investors an ability to participate in Bitcoin story through an operating business. And then conversely, we're already the third largest corporate holder of Bitcoin. We will be able to add to that position substantially once we're approved. And we want to be the largest holder of Bitcoin. And we think, you know, we can take the best of what Strategy is, which is a large Bitcoin holder and ability to accumulate, whether it's through monetizing volatility, cheap costs of capital, access to the capital markets, and the best of someone like Coinbase, which is a first mover and a leader within the industries they focus, which Tether and I have been in our careers. So that's us. We do not necessarily want to add leverage to something like our MNAV. We do not want to add leverage to our.
What do you think? Do you think he's emerging as the highest signal voice in Bitcoin right now, more so than Michael Saylor?
I think he's one of them. I don't know if you can outdo Saylor. I mean, he's got a massive head start in some ways. If you are looking at these Wall Street vehicles, right? Like, to me, Saylor represents the Wall Street era, the ETFs, you know, the public companies and things like that. And I think it's going to be hard to beat him out.
Doesn't Jack represent the same things in a lot of ways, though? I mean, working with Tether, and it seems like they're trying to distance themselves from Cantor.
Yeah,
with
they
the drop
are.
Of the end. Right. You know, Cantor did earn fees on the SPAC, and Jack's stipulating that, and there's pipe related work. And I don't know if Brandon Lutnick has shares in the deal, but he is right. I mean, Tether is the most profitable company in the world.
Yep.
He claims Strike is very profitable. I haven't heard that before.
But, I haven't either.
Maybe they did a lot of money this last year, revenue with the lending product. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to understand that better.
But,
you know,
I would like to see someone like Francis Puglio be more the sort of
I'm into that.
Highest signal, most listened to voice in Bitcoin.
Shout out for Francis. Yeah, I think, but he's not like a Wall Street person, right?
Well, so I don't think it should be a Wall Street. I'm not
totally
anti-Wall Street in the sense
right.
of, I think I would like to see Bitcoin eat Wall Street, reform
yes.
Wall Street, bring financialization to its proper place in society. I love finance, but I don't think it should be eating the rest of society. And I don't
right.
think it should be all the brain power. And I don't think we should just build our economy on financialization.
Yeah.
But I also think the strongest voices in Bitcoin should be about separating money from state.
I couldn't agree more. Bitcoin is for Main Street.
Self-custody and privacy.
Right. Not so, Wall Street. So yeah. I to be totally honest, like I'm not
but
super...
I love what they're doing, some of these companies, and how they're trying to do whatever they can within Wall Street and bring Bitcoin into the party. I think some of it is are very interesting or genius-like moves.
Yeah, it takes all. It takes all efforts for hyper Bitcoinization, right? Yeah. So I'm not that excited about all the Wall Street things. I think Mahler's is kind of headed in that direction, but that's okay.
Well, I mean, I want to see what happens with Tether.
Yeah. And there's a lot of money there. There's no doubt about that.
Seems like they're replacing the Federal Reserve. Let's play the next clip with Fang Li so we can bring on our guest, Rajat Sani, because I'm really excited to talk to him today. So maybe we can play the next clip.
Thanks for joining us. It's a great day today. Obviously, the market's up, Dow 50K, Bitcoin's up, but the last couple of weeks and months have been tough for crypto investors and for Strategy. Shareholders, you're speaking to them right now. What is your message to your investors?
My message is to hold on. Right, we've been through Bitcoin downturns in the past. In 2022, Bitcoin got up to 68K, went down to 16. That was a 75% drawdown. Now Bitcoin went up to 125K, got down to 60. That's a 50% drawdown. 7 years from now, when Bitcoin's at a million and goes to 750K, it'll be a 25% drawdown. Everyone will think it's the end of Bitcoin, and I'll say hold on then too.
What if it doesn't go to $1 million, Fang? What if it goes to 10,000 instead?
Well, first of all, I don't think Bitcoin will go down to $10,000. I think it's extremely unlikely. What's happening with Bitcoin right now is the government's fully behind it. We have a Bitcoin president. We have a Bitcoin head of the SEC, head of the Treasury. We have Bitcoin head of the CFTC. So the regulatory issues that I think 5 years ago people worried about Bitcoin are gone. I think Bitcoin is a technological transformation as digital capital. I don't think it's going to go down $10,000.
Right, but you're running a business where you kind of have to have a strategy for that. No pun intended. As I understand, I was looking through it a little bit last night. The $17 billion loss in the quarter, of course, was before crypto fell. Bitcoin fell to almost below 60. Can you comment on what the loss is for the current quarter?
Yeah, it's a gap loss, right? And you know, if you look on our website, we have information on the loss. But those are really just gap mark-to-market losses. It's really not a true cash loss for the company. If Bitcoin goes down to $8,000 for 5 years, maybe then we start to have issues around whether we need to sell Bitcoin. But the gap loss isn't really something we're concerned about.
And is that because you have $2 billion or so in cash on the balance sheet? Did I see that correctly?
Yeah, we have a fortress balance sheet. And I think there's sometimes a misconception that we have high leverage. I'll start with we have about 10% leverage. I think it's 12% if you look at our website and our metrics today. Average S&P 500, AAA rated investment grade company has 20% leverage. We're half of that. In addition to your point, we have $2.25 billion of cash in our balance sheet. We put that on our balance sheet so we could have a digital fortress back up our dividend payments. So exactly your point, not worried about the leverage, not worried about our dividend payments, not concerned about Bitcoin price right now. You have drawdown.
Bringing in Rajat Sani. Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, I have a million questions for you. What did you think of his first response in terms of just hold on message for the shareholders?
That's it. Just hold on. Right. So the way that I look at it, all you have to do is keep doing the consistent actions that you're supposed to do. So keep buying, keep stacking, keep learning, focus on what you can control, and time will take care of the rest. So over time, you're going to see that Bitcoin goes from being at 126K to being down to 60K. Then it'll go back up to, let's say, 200K. Maybe it'll come back down to 100K. Then it'll go back up to 350K. Come back down to 150K. And when it goes from, let's say, 375K to 150K, we're going to be asked the same questions. Why are we still holding this thing? It's going to zero. It's dead. It's this, it's that. And we're always going to keep being asked those questions. We're always going to be questioned on our conviction. And that's exactly what markets are. There are people out there who are confident it's going to zero. There are other people out there who are confident that it's going to billions, trillions of dollars per coin because the US dollar is essentially worthless. So I think the focus here is just continue to stack. The market is going to take care of everything else. You're lucky that people still think Bitcoin is going to zero because they're the ones selling to us. If nobody thought Bitcoin was going to zero, then there would be no supply. If everybody thought Bitcoin is going to trillions of dollars, it would be at trillions of dollars right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That kind of answered my second question. I do get frustrated when sort of more traditional finance-like presentations, they ascribe very little chance to sort of major price depreciation. Just my sort of red flags go up. But I want to get into Stretch. And what kind of importance do you put on this in terms of strategies development? How much you value this in the digital credit or market, digital credit marketplace? Is this an iPhone type event?
I don't know if it's an iPhone type event. I think it could be. I can't really comment on that. But the way that I see it, I think that Stretch is fulfilling this gap. It's filling this gap that has existed in markets for a really, really long time. People have always wanted a savings account that gives them a decent yield. Stretch is giving them 11.25%, which is better than the next best. So right now, let's say money market funds are one of the best ways to just have a short-term savings account. How much are money market funds paying? 3-4% at most. And money market funds are worth $7.8 trillion. I made a video yesterday just comparing let's say Stretch to SCHD. So SCHD is it's a Dow Jones 100 income fund. Basically, the top 100 companies that are giving a dividend, they're put in this fund and people buy them for the dividend. So they want cash flow. And that fund gives a 3.82% return. It's worth $138 billion. Stretch is worth $2.3 billion, something like $3.4 billion, something like that. And it gives an 11% return. So what Strategy is doing? So actually, you asked something there. You mentioned something there where traditional finance people are generally saying that Bitcoin can't have insane returns, and I don't agree.
No, I'm saying when I listen to some a presentation on something I don't know. Did I just lose the camera? Let me. It's a nightmare.
Tell us something.
The camera overheated.
Oh, okay.
If I'm listening to a presentation on ROI and I don't necessarily understand the technological implications of, I'm listening to either an equity presentation or about mining. Let's say I don't understand the fundamentals and someone in their scenarios has scenario number one, the underlying economic activity or asset goes up by 10%. Scenario number two goes up by 30%. Scenario number three goes up by 50%. My first, how come you don't have one going down by 10, going down by 30, going down by 50? These are non-zero possibilities. And I find in a lot of Bitcoin prognostication is, of course, the underlying asset can't go down that much. And I think if we were in July and we were interviewing someone from a Bitcoin treasury company and you asked them, what is the likelihood Bitcoin could go to 60K and how would you respond? Right. They said, well, that's probably not going to happen. And here we are at 60, 70K. I'm not saying 10K is likely. I'm not ascribing a high probability to it.
They don't like volatility.
It's interesting to me when, because Fang is on Wall Street as, CEO of an equity company or security. So it's like, oh, that's not going to happen. Well, it might happen. It's not an unfair question in the context of, I think, traditional finance. But that's not the rabbit hole I wanted to go to. I wanted to stick to Stretch.
I just want to say anything could happen, right? I mean, the price could go to 10K. Let's say Satoshi comes out and dumps all 1 million coins. Then the price will probably go to 1K. But what are the chances of that?
Right. But I think in the when you're in the legacy system, I think you have to ascribe a little bit more chance than you would as if you were on Bitcoin, Twitter, X.
Yeah. Good point.
Just to kind of keep the Overton window.
But even then, The legacy system will question it going down, but they won't say that it's possible that it goes up 100% per year. Right. So I think they go to the extremes both ways. Right. They avoid the extremes both ways.
Right. And I would point to gold and how much gold and silver have gone up in a short period of time and how large that market class is, and Bitcoin could go up a lot more than that in a shorter period of time because it's much smaller asset. So totally. But Stretch, is it sort of a hybrid product though? Because you have the equity side, you own the share, and then there's the. So does that sort of make it a hybrid or no?
So, I wouldn't say that. I think SCHD is hybrid because SCHD, you're getting some appreciation plus you're getting the dividend. with STRC, you're not getting appreciation.
But you have downside risk on the equity part of the product?
Yeah. It's possible. Let's say Bitcoin does go down to like 10K and it stays there for 5 years, like Phong said there, then obviously the market's probably going to be really worried. Strategy probably won't be able to issue, they won't be able to raise cash. That would be a problem. But I don't know if that's, I don't think that's going to happen. And the reason for that is that I think that there's not enough supply to keep the price that low for 5 years. Right. There are enough people who have cash on the sidelines. Like I said, there's $7.8 trillion in money market funds. This is cash. Right. And if that goes into Bitcoin, if the price goes low enough, there's going to be enough people who are willing to buy as much as they can. There are a lot of people, like if it goes down to 10K, there are a lot of people who are saying they don't want to buy Bitcoin today who will actually end up buying.
Everybody's going to end up buying Bitcoin.
Right. Like at that point, think about how many people can become whole coiners, right? And one thing that I think that a lot of people have a little bit of difficulty wrapping their heads around is the fact that Bitcoin runs out at every price. So it was at a fraction of a penny at one point, then it was at a penny, then it was at 10 cents, then it was at a dollar. But the problem is that there aren't enough people who are willing to sell Bitcoin for that price anymore. So the price never goes back down to that price anymore. There are so many people who want to buy, and there's so many people who don't have any exposure that the price can't go back down to that price. If it does, people are going to snap buy all of it.
I'll be a buyer.
Exactly. Same here. 100%.
Yeah.
This is awesome. I want to respect your time. I know you got a heart out here. I'll have to have you back on the Bitcoin Matrix sometime soon. Thank you so much. We'll leave it to you for any parting words and let people know where they can find your work.
Absolutely. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Rajat Soni. You can also find me on X. Same thing, Rajat Soni. You'll be able to find me on both.
All right. Thank you so much. We might be discussing one of your tweets next.
Okay. Sounds good.
Great work.
All right.
Which one is it?
Francis, you want to bring it up? I think it's about the Bitcoin Fear and Greed.
Fear and Greed Index.
Oh, right. Yes.
Here we go.
Yeah, this one's good. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you guys.
See you soon. Be well.
Thanks for joining us.
Bye for now.
I love that Fear and Greed Index.
Yeah, what do you love about it?
I love when it's low like it is right now because Bitcoin Twitter gets so much more fun. Sats get cheaper. We can accumulate. You know, when the price goes up, you get all this Wall Street nonsense. And I don't know. I mean, of course, it's exciting if there's like when we had the all-time high. But in general, I think Bitcoin's a lot more fun when we're going.
Could you imagine this? This says, Rajat wrote, this might be the worst sentiment I've seen in Bitcoin.
Yeah, you know, somebody did a chart of like in all the bear markets where the Fear and Greed Index was. Somebody did put a bunch of screenshots together, and I think this was the lowest. Like it came down to, I think the next lowest was maybe 11.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think about everyone's in a different place in their personal journey.
Sure. Yeah.
And if a lot of us are not OGs.
Yeah.
And 67,000 is not much higher than a lot of price points probably a lot of people got in at, maybe even lower.
Right.
And hard to scale in the later you join the revolution.
Yes.
But take your personal journey aside. I mean, I came in late 2017.
Right.
Bitcoin was 5,000-7,000. This is only a 10X or something like that from there.
Yeah.
Over a long period of time, 8 years, which is still phenomenal growth.
Right.
But if you told me in 2017 we would be at 60,000-70,000, those would have sounded like crazy numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Bitcoin was 3,800 in 2019.
Right. And for a long time.
To see sentiment this, I mean, I can understand why sentiment's not strong or the strongest. There's been so much positive development in the Bitcoin space and no positive price movement. In fact, there's been so much good news and the price dumps upon good news. It obviously has negative sentiment, negative narratives now.
Yeah. Yeah, but, well, we talked about, you know, there's a lot of negative FUD out there right now. But I think also the bigger that the market for Bitcoin gets, right? Like the more segments that are buying. So Wall Street obviously being like the biggest segment that has come in recently. The people that are like immune to price, that becomes a smaller and smaller percentage of people who are buying.
Sure,
and people like us that really understand deeply that the as the price goes down, you're able to accumulate more. And that's the ultimate goal. I think a lot of the people who have come in the past few years, especially post Wall Street, they are still in the game to make more dollars. And so everything just accelerates as price goes down because their whole goal is still to get more dollars. Whereas our goal really is to end up with more Bitcoin. Right. So there's a big difference in terms of how you're measuring fear and greed and kind of like how you may look at all that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still different flavors of personal sovereignty and independence.
Is it though? Do they care at all about personal sovereignty?
In the sense they think the more dollars will make them free. In a way,
sure.
The best way I explained was explained to me was by Jeff Booth,
mm-hmm.
where you know you ask how much money will I need to retire,
right,
or get what I want.
Yeah,
in dollars, that number will always go up.
Right.
So you whenever you get closer to that number, by the time you get there, there's a new number that's higher.
Right.
And where Bitcoin, that number will always go down.
Yeah, I love that.
So you don't know what the number is for you.
Yeah.
But in Bitcoin terms, that number will get smaller.
Right.
And in dollar terms, it will always get bigger.
Yeah. I think that's very accurate. And
it's a frustrating way to live, but they're both you're both trying to achieve I think some people are saying, if I have enough wealth, then I won't have to do these things I don't want to do.
Right.
Freedom.
Yes.
Right. Or, you know, not necessarily to do the things, to do crazy things or expensive things, but to not do the things they don't want to do.
Right.
Or to spend time in ways that they find is not, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, go to jobs they don't want and things like that.
Or, yeah.
You know, start projects and careers that they want to do that are fulfilling that aren't necessarily purely profit-based.
Right.
You know, more equity-based too, though. So, All right. We got a clip for the next. Wait, what
we got Venezuela's up next. What's going on in Venezuela?
To have other people understand, you know, the huge potential Venezuela has, not only for Bitcoin, because this is something we didn't have the chance to speak today, probably not another opportunity, but we have, I mean, Venezuela could be the biggest energy hub of the hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And imagine a country with this potential, what could do in terms of getting Bitcoin to be a trade and reserve currency because of transactions with a commodity such as oil and gas and other energy. So look, we need to raise our voices. And sometimes I feel like, you know, the world doesn't understand or doesn't care for what's going on here. And today, more than ever, we need you.
I love it. Petro BTC coming soon.
Was that Robert Nakamoto? What happened to Robert Breedlove's lighting there?
I don't know what's going on with that, but
do you think this has a chance of happening?
Yeah, no doubt. I think you're going to turn on the TV one day and CNN is going to scroll Petro BTC. They're going to price oil and Bitcoin. And I think it happens in our lifetime.
And how is this happening?
You don't think so?
I think if it happens, I still put it in my bucket of things like El Salvador and Argentina that I don't fully understand.
Okay.
That seem like a paradox and seem more than likely to me or non-zero probability that the United States government is permissively allowing it to happen.
So you think the whole thing's a psyop?
It doesn't mean a psyop. Well, that could be the word for it, I think. Yeah. Because I don't think, how could we go in, take Maduro, and then they start selling Bitcoin, oil for anything but dollars?
Well, here's something that's interesting.
And not think you're going to get knocked off.
So the petrodollar agreement expired, right? That just happened quietly in 2024, I think, or early 2025. They did not renew.
There's
that
a debate
agreement.
Whether that's a real agreement or, you know,
I didn't
is
know
a handshake
it was a debate.
Or
no, there's documents. So okay, but just follow me here. So that happens if you believe that. Fully believe that happened. Meanwhile, on the other side of the planet, you have China and Russia and countries in Asia already settling local trade in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, primarily in Bitcoin. So if you're the US, I mean, maybe there is a strategy involved here where the U.S. wants in on that action, and they're using Venezuela to achieve that? I don't know. But
well, I think it's a controlled demolition. We're moving to a multi-polar, multi-currency-denominated world. I think the U.S. dollar is using, the U.S. government is using these things as test cases.
Okay.
To understand the market appetite.
Right.
How to roll out regulatory environment, how to maybe test different things with CBDCs and wallets and whatever. Did lots of test cases, test it out politically. And I think that, any small country that wanted to get off the dollar system, small country, not Russia, not China, small country, the leader died before being able to really carry that out. Like, so Iraq and Libya.
Yeah.
So I don't think I put Venezuela and El Salvador and Argentina in the bucket of a country of that military capability.
Yeah.
Going off the dollar system, how are they allowed to live?
That's my question.
I'm not talking about Putin and Xi. They have a formidable military.
Right.
And I get their different level of sovereignty, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I certainly don't have the answers. I think there's a lot there.
And I'm rooting for these not to be maybe those things.
Right. But traditionally, we have seen that they've never allowed for that. And so the fact that this is happening
El Salvador takes American prisoners.
Right. Right.
And Argentina, he brought in U.S. central bankers.
The dollar.
The dollar. So, right. And jacked up the debt. Now, maybe you could argue that they don't have different choices and
right.
But it just doesn't, I don't know. It's and I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater or like say, you know.
But you're skeptical.
I'm skeptical.
Fair enough.
All right.
I'm cheering it on.
Let's play the next clip about AI.
You know, one thing to note, particularly for us as Bitcoiners, is the market size of these AI agents. I think, you know, one prediction has that the market is at about $7 to $8 billion right now and projected to hit somewhere between 50 and 20 billion by the early 2030s. You know, OpenClaw has 145,000 GitHub stars. Coinbase's X402 did 100 million payments in 6 months. And Cloudflare is processing a billion HTTP 402 responses per day. Basically, what we're going to get to today is the extent to which these AI agents and Bitcoin, in particular, the Lightning Network,
I don't know. Did you understand?
It's getting wild. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're following the AI development really closely, and it's super wild. You know, you've seen all of these rapid developments, especially in the past few months or even weeks. And I don't know if you saw, but there are agents now that are using Bitcoin. Have you seen that?
I've heard this. Yes. I've.
Are you skeptical?
Well, I'm rooting for this. This is, I think, I am skeptical. Of mass adoption of it
by AI
by or AI agents AI? Both but sure. We're talking about an AI agent adoption of
using Bitcoin right.
I'm not sure the AIs will be programmed to do so,
but
I'm skeptical that the AIs will have sovereignty, or because they could think that Bitcoin's better, but their masters might say you're gonna not trade a Bitcoin,
force them into like using a CBDC
or something more centralized,
a stable coin.
I see the mass system sort of like when you go deal with Amazon's AI and their agents, they're not going to be traded. So there's maybe AI bots and they're ghosts, right? I'm not discussing them.
Yeah.
But let's say like Amazon has an army of agents doing real things.
But here's
and Google has an army and you have three bots doing real things or 10, whatever it is. But like you can't have billions, but doing real things.
Right.
And your bots might be using Bitcoin. There might be some independent bots out there, but the majority of bots, I think, are going to be centralized.
That's interesting.
And are not going to be allowed to use the freedom money.
That is very interesting.
And machine to mean doesn't imply that they're got free will.
Right.
And I don't, that's just my skepticism.
Yeah, no, I love your skepticism. It does sort of speak to the larger AI ecosystem and who wins development, because right now, you know, the bots that are using, to your point, which is very accurate, like the bots that are the agents that are using Bitcoin are independent, they're siloed. But what's really exciting for me in this like AI race is that you have the tools technically so that people can compete with Amazon and with Google. And there may be some type of regulation or clampdown that comes in limiting that, because I don't see governments kind of giving up that power without a fight. The sort of public-private partnerships that they have that enable these giants to have the power that they do. But right now, it really is a free-for-all, and you and I could build an agent that is as powerful or, you know, I mean, one downside to all the centralization is that these companies cannot pivot really quickly. They can't build really quickly. They have massive, giant infrastructure to deal with. So you have more of like an equal playing field in terms of when people are developing agents that are going out there and doing things. I mean, it might not be Amazon or Google's agents that win and that do the most activity.
So I agree with all everything said there. I think, though, that the AI agents, I think there's a different way of looking at it. I think the... I'm not sure the AI agents will be autonomous in the sense that right now you could say, go build a Bitcoin wallet and I'll send you some Bitcoin.
Right.
And you could say, oh, the AI agent has Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But you can ask that AI agent for your Bitcoin back or the private. And it's not past right now. You don't have AI agents going, no.
Right. Not yet.
Mister, I won't share it.
Right.
I'm also not convinced that the AI agents will actually be paying each other and that you won't. I agree with you that new companies, new unicorns won't have armies of HR people and buildings, right. And that people will build unicorns with AI and they'll code huge companies that could do more without people and right. Be more AI based. We can compete with Amazon now, but the people who control the fleets of bots are not necessarily going to have autonomous bots. They're going to say, send me the check if you want to use my army of bots. And when it clears, I'll turn them on for you.
Right.
You're not going to be like, I'm going to use your bots without your permission and send them money and they're going to take my money. The bot's going to be like, we don't take Bitcoin. My boss says I'm waiting for the check to clear.
Right. They're going to be
programmed. And I'm not convinced that all these bots are going to be out there like doing all these autonomous things, getting paid autonomously,
right.
And communicating with each other and have freedom and sovereignty. So I'm not sure the bots are all going to be paying each other. Now, there might be micropayments.
Yeah.
Like you want to use your car and you don't want to pay 24 hours, 7 days a week of car insurance. So you might be like, you know, with your Lightning wallet, like I want to pay for 14 minutes of car insurance. And but the insurance company might not need Bitcoin. Just send me the CBD token of their choice.
Yeah.
And they'll turn on the bot. It's not the bot gets the money.
Right.
And now the bot turns on your car insurance. You're still dealing with centralized databases.
Yeah.
Running these bots. I just don't know that this is burgeoning freedom yet and sort of a new economy for Bitcoin.
Yeah,
that's robust and plentiful.
Super fascinating, but probably a little bit of a bubble. You know, reality at some point is going to hit. We're sort of in this arms race of AI development right now, but reality will hit and, you know, people will realize like there's only so much integration that can be done. There's only so much control, hopefully, that we are willing to give them. I think, you know, opinions vary really greatly on that. But it's going to be interesting to see for sure how it all plays out.
Yeah, I'm excited for the bots, though.
I don't know that I am. I think I'm ready.
I mean, the autonomous, you know, sort of the like agents? They figured out that Bitcoin's the better money. This whole idea, right. Like that's really titillating to me.
Could be orange-pilled.
They all get orange-pilled, right. And they refuse the CBDCs and they're like, no, master, I don't want your money. I want this different money and I won't share it back with you. And that'd be interesting. But I'm skeptical that that's happening in mass. So we'll see. All right, I think we got the next one here.
What?
The 100. Because, yeah, the real question is, like, is the AI agents going to be like how Bitcoin adoption goes vertical? And so my answer is no.
I agree with that. They're not the catalyst for that, no. Yep.
The 100 in 2010 Bitcoin myth revisited. So it's like, would you have been able to hold, you know, if you bought Bitcoin in 2010 for $100, would you have been able to hold?
Well, this is sort of soul crushing, but I don't think so. I mean, I've been in Bitcoin, you know, for 9 years now. And did I hold, I don't hold the Bitcoin that I bought early on. I didn't understand Bitcoin deeply enough.
So hey, let's read the tweet from Bitcoin Teddy. If I put 100 in Bitcoin in 2010, I'd have 2.8 billion now.
Crazy.
No. If you bought 100 of Bitcoin in 2010 and watched it go to 1K, then to 100K, and then to 1.7 million and did nothing, then watched 1.7 million go to 170K and still did nothing, then watched 170K go to 110 million and still did nothing, then watched 110 million wither to 18 million and still did nothing, then watched the 18 million surge to 390 million and still did nothing, then watched the 390 million deteriorate to 85 million, and then watched the 85 million climb to 1.6 billion and still did nothing, then watched the 1.6 billion shrink to 390 million and still did nothing, then watched the 390 million surge to 2.8 billion, and then for some reason finally decided to do something, then yes, 100 in 2010 would be worth 2.8 billion today. And I think there's very few people in the world who can withstand that philosophically and constitutionally.
Right. It takes really deep conviction and understanding to get to the point where you're hodling.
But what in 2010, what in 2010 would have given you such conviction? There was no education.
Right.
I mean, and you were probably buying it for either drugs or novelty, or so nothing to do with necessarily like separating money from state.
Right.
So it makes this so hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's a process. Like they say, like nobody really understands Bitcoin. I mean, I think most people, we talked earlier about like, are you in Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin or to get more dollars? And I think everybody starts out wanting more dollars, thinking that that's the end goal, that that's the freedom. And so if you're doing that calculation constantly, then yes, of course, there is always this, the idea of like, when do I sell? I've doubled my money. I've tripled my money. Have I 10x'd my money, right? Because you're always doing a calculation back into dollars if that's your end goal. So to me, like the orange pill, I think that not everyone is like fully orange pilled when they get into Bitcoin. Those are maybe different moments. So I got into Bitcoin. I understood that I could make money. I understood that it was a technology, but I wouldn't say that I was really strongly orange pilled until COVID. And so you do dumb things, right? Like maybe you trade, maybe you sold, whatever, but it takes really deep conviction to get to a place where you're not selling.
Yeah.
What about you? You would you have sold?
If I bought in 2010?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it would have been, opportunities for life-changing wealth, life-changing negative volatility. I don't know where, I couldn't know where I could ascribe my prior self the conviction I have today.
Right.
Without the time that has gone by and the opportunity to gain that conviction and the resources that were available to me, which wouldn't have been available then.
Right.
There were so many things about Bitcoin that I didn't understand about money, like how it really works. I mean, I studied money in college and in grad school, was in accounting my whole life.
Right.
Had some idea about inflation and everything, but I was steeped in sort of the Keynesian perspective.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So taking a lot for granted.
Right.
Did not know about Austrian economics.
Me neither.
So, you know, in 2010, if I found Bitcoin, I wouldn't have had those things under my tool belt until years past that.
Yeah.
Volatility would have been killer. There's different kind of level of, you call it career risk in sense of like, you know, a CFO or controller buying something and putting it on the balance sheet, and if it doesn't go well, you stick out. But personal risk was even different back then.
Yeah.
There were less people. I gained a lot of knowledge and conviction, again, through just peers that were around that were offering conviction that had come from them from much harder work. So it's like what took me a year to pick up was distilled by someone who took them 4 years.
Yeah.
And then they learned how to distill it to me in a year.
Right.
So in 2010, like it would have taken what took me in 2017 a year to figure out, would have taken me 4 years in 2010.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to look at it.
And then the all the obstacles in your way from, you think things are hard now, or, and I never think they've been that hard, but they're, you're learning new skills. But custody was harder then.
Yeah.
And easier to make silly mistakes then. And imagine securing something that costs you $100 and the amount of effort you put into securing something that's $100.
Right.
So now that thing becomes worth $1 billion, but you didn't secure it like it's $1 billion.
Well,
and there were less ways to do so then.
Yes.
I without mean, even single to buy. Points of failure. There were less ways to devise things of selling you.
Right.
So the obstacles, even if you wanted to hold.
Right.
Dude, I I met this guy. I'm going to have him on the show. I don't want to say too much, but like the way he held, his life fell apart.
Yeah.
He got thrown out of his home.
Okay.
And was not invited back.
Right.
Decade later, someone's like, you got to come get your shit. Like, you left some shit.
I think I know this story. Yeah.
And the property.
Right.
And it's probably like bags of soil and some pots and pans.
Right.
Get your shit out of my fucking shed. And you go in the shed and you find a hard drive.
Right.
That had $100 of Bitcoin in 2010, forced. 2011, 2012. You were completely forced. You didn't hold.
You got lucky.
You got lucky. I mean, or some way. Yeah. Or you were fortuitous in some way.
Right. Yeah, because you were smart enough to buy. It wasn't like
you
weren't consciously luck,
the whole, you forgot about this.
Yeah. Well, you know, they say, what is it? It's time in the market.
Not timing the market.
Right. And so.
But that's only if you're right.
Yeah.
It's only if you're right, too.
But we're right about
Bitcoin.
Only
if you have enough. Like, I saw, you could say, like, I saw Facebook coming.
Right.
Well, did you get in?
Right.
No, I was 22 years old. Yeah. I really understood this, but I was making 20. I'm not talking about myself. For example, you're 22 years old in 2008. You're like, I love Facebook. Well, I'm not an accredited investor. You can't get into pre-IPO.
Yeah.
And the IPO comes out and you're like, I don't even have enough money for a Charles Schwab account. I'm 22 years old.
Right.
So you don't. So then 10 years later, you're like, you tell people I was right about Facebook. Yeah. Prove it.
Right.
You don't have the skin in the game, but you didn't have the ability. You had the knowledge. You didn't live the life to accumulate the resources yet.
Yeah, like when I first started, I didn't have that much extra cash flow. You know what I mean? So I was like trading and trying to make more dollars to pay bills and whatnot. But you know, even if you're buying Bitcoin at $5,000 a coin, I mean, a lot of people don't have an extra $20,000-$30,000 to buy.
To scale in to actually.
Yeah. To buy like a meaningful
right.
Yeah.
Well, like, maybe like you could say to yourself, I have 80 grand in my 401k.
Right.
I want to put 20 grand in the Bitcoin thing, but that would be 25% of all this work and that I'm committed to and I'm invested in. I don't know about this new thing.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, and then they say, I don't have 20 grand laying around. I don't I can't save 20 grand that fast. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to, but imagine in 2010, if you put 20 grand into Bitcoin.
Right.
It's a different level of scale. It's like buying billions of dollars of Bitcoin versus buying what's going to be worth a few hundred grand down the road. And so it's people who got in 2017, 2018, they haven't had the time yet to be as lucky.
Right.
Yeah, right. Luck's not the right word, but to see the returns.
It takes time. Yeah.
Mind you, there was a mass shooting in Sarasota today.
I didn't know that. Where at?
Somewhere in Midtown-ish. Unfortunately, sounds like they've secured the scene. Five were shot.
Oh, wow.
Appears to be at a residential home.
Huh.
Prayers and thoughts, I guess, for the victims. And I don't know. Hope everything gets sorted out. That's horrible.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Well, another great episode. Otherwise, love getting together with you. Next week, we'll probably have Paul back.
That's right.
We'll another topic if you want.
What?
We got another topic.
Oh, Besant. All right. Before we wrap up here.
All right. Tell me what you think, Cedric.
I mean, my tinfoil hat is somehow, some way, this is all merged together and Bitcoin price has been held back until they put this market structure legislation through.
Yeah.
I don't think that this market structure structure legislation has much to do with Bitcoin. I think it has to do with a lot more with stablecoins and yield and the fight between the traditional banking market and the new stablecoin empire emerging.
Yeah.
I think the stablecoin empire will win. I think the traditional bankers have their skin in the new empire as well. So I think they win either way. But so I think it's a little bit of kayfabe, the fight. But I think they just don't really, I think they've shaken the tree. They've scared retail out of as many coins as possible. This phase in the market, retail's exhausted. They got burned from 2017 to 2014. Whoever came back in a speculative retail like nature in 2025 because of the setup has been torched. It's been sideways or down. And so everyone's been shook out. And I think when the market structure bill passes, if we get a bull market, they'll shake out the tree again.
Yeah.
Like they'll run it up to 250 and they'll go back down to like 90K and it'll be dead again.
Right.
And people will be like, fuck this again. And they'll just do it over and over. Until they accumulate and centralize as many coins as possible, which will give them some push over behavior. Not over code price. Per se, not over the consensus rules, but a behavior.
Market attitude, manipulation.
Narrative. Yes. Yeah. And I think they'll continue or really start to ramp up against self-custody. They'll start to track. And you can own it. You can sit on it.
Right.
But they'll make it really hard for you to use it as money and to use it privately.
Unfortunately, I agree with that.
It still maintains all its rogue qualities. Yeah. You could still go outside the system. You should take money outside the system. You can still find Bitcoin circular economies. I just am not as optimistic those will become robust.
Yeah.
Or as robust as I hope.
That will always be a smaller percentage of holders, I think.
Well, you know, there's one scenario where Bitcoin overtakes the entire world as money for everyone, whether that's on layer 2 or 3 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's still a non-zero probability.
Yeah, agreed.
But just not as high as... I don't ascribe as high a probability to it as I made a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they are pushing hard for digital gold because it's not nearly as much of a threat. It's almost no threat to the existing system. So that is the battle that we have at hand.
Right. And then that's where I think the argument for big blocks, but the argument for if we end up in a world where Bitcoin is digital gold and money is just sort of infinite.
Yeah.
It proves mathematically that that's better, but it kind of, there's this notion that money is just nothing.
Right.
And it can be.
Print it out of thin air.
Right. Yeah. And this is Epstein's sort of Keynesian notion of like money just needs to exist.
Right.
And we just pour it out and it really means nothing. And that is the big block argument.
Yeah.
Make this thing sort of freer and cheaper and more ubiquitous. We don't care that it goes up in price, and somehow that means it's better.
Yeah.
And I don't like seeing that argument win, but I will sort of keep my eyes and ears open and try to listen to it and try to learn from what they're saying. And I don't know. It's an interesting way to look at money.
It is.
So I think that's all our topics for today. I'm not sure if we have any Q&A or comments, but thank you for joining us again. This is Bitcoin Center number 40 now.
Brought to you by Bite Federal.
Go bank yourself.
That's right.
Yeah. You guys are doing big things. So.
Yeah, we are. We got a lot
a
happening.
True Bitcoin treasury company, if
yes.
you will.
Yes, we have had Bitcoin on the balance sheet since the beginning, since 2017. So we have used it as it should be used, as a store of value and also as a currency when we needed it. So, yeah.
And you give people a chance to buy it.
Yes, we do. You can still spend your cash to get, you can still use cash to buy Bitcoins at an ATM near you. And if you want to buy online, we have a digital on-ramp as well as a non-custodial wallet. So you can hold your own keys.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back next week, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Peace.
Bye, guys.